Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic, which means I am still out at Ashburn getting to watch full practices. It's the last week of that. Training camp ended last week officially, but we still get this week ahead of the preseason finale Saturday in Baltimore. Today was an interesting day, of course, because today the Commanders placed Chase Young on the PUP list, which means he'll miss at least four games into the regular season. We'll get into that in a moment, plus some other news of the day. Some other moves were made. We'll talk about Ron Rivera. He was asked today, who are some young guys that have stood out? We'll get into some of that. As far as the guests go, friend of the podcast, Mark Bullock, joined me. We talked early this morning before practice. He is, of course, overseas in across the pond. So we talked before I went out there. We broke it. We discussed, I think, all the things you'd want to hear about from a guy who watches film. What does he think of Carson Wentz? And are we seeing any differences in the offense with his new quarterback? We got into Jahan Dotson, Antonio Gibson, Brian Robinson, Jamin Davis, the third down defense, all that good stuff. So we'll get to all that in a few minutes. In addition, a little bit of a fun segment. You may have heard about Chef Mel. Many of us on the beat have mentioned Chef Mel in the past. He has supplied us with food at times, at least in the pre-pandemic days, but even still over the last year or two here and there. I caught up with Chef Mel at practice the other day because his real job, along with doing some catering, is he cooks for the players, Antonio Gibson among them. And I wanted to just sort of get his feel, or, you know, just talk to him about that. What's it like to cook for these players? How did he get into it? What are some of the, what's the process for figuring out how to help these guys? He's obviously not feeding them like the way I would be fed, like, you know, crap food. Like, he's trying to get them into shape. This is part of their regimen for the season. So we talked about that, and I think he even threw me a chicken recipe in there as well. So we'll get to all that here in a few moments on the Standing Room Only podcast. Obviously, you know the deal. You can find the podcast, iTunes, Spotify, or on the Athletic app, or anywhere you do your podcasting. And of course, go check out The Athletic. Lots of good stuff coming up. I will just say I've got a few projects coming out soon, and I believe there's still a dollar discount for per month on there. If you go click on one of my articles, you can subscribe there. All right, let's get to some of the news of the day, though, before we get to these guys, interviews. So, Chase Young. Okay, so not exactly surprising news, right? We've talked about this before. Ron Rivera, when he told us a few weeks ago that Chase would be out at least the first game, he kind of gave it away. He had said that he thought he could go in the PUP list, and at that moment, he was thinking the PUP list was 6 weeks. It has been reduced to four. The point being, though, that he was seemingly mentally being prepared where Chase Young could be out that long. Obviously, we know he had an ACL tear, but a little bit more than that, his patella tendon required repair as well. So he had some pretty significant injuries, and we'll have to see when he's able to come back. It's at least four games, which means he'll miss the first Eagles and Cowboys game. But that doesn't mean he will be back in week four. And remember, week six, they play on a Thursday at Chicago. So if he's not able to go week five, week six could be in danger since it's a short week there. So, you know, we may not see Chase Young back for a bit. And then, of course, even if he's on the field, that's not the same as, hey, is he 100%? Is he explosive? All those elements. And that's not even then from there getting into, has Chase Young improved his technique, that things he needed to work on after what was obviously a disappointing sophomore campaign. So I think that is all something to keep an eye on there. In the meantime, of course, James Smith-Williams has been filling in for Chase Young. You've got Casey Tuhill, F.A. Obada, Shaka Toney, William Bradley King. I have had them taking 10, keeping 10 defensive linemen. That was with Chase Young. I think everybody I just said, I think I would have on the roster at this point. Maybe there's an argument for a Justin Hamilton if you want to play Daniel Wise, one of the defensive tackles, more on the end. But I think he's looked pretty effective inside so far. Mark and I talk about him. So that's the way I would go, I think. I would want to kind of see what we can do with Shaka Toney and William Bradley King, because I think both of them were promising. I had William Bradley King on my 53 prior to this last game when Toney had a 1.5 sacks. I think that's an interesting scenario. But anyway, the story of there, Chase Young officially is going to miss at least 4 games. And, you know, obviously that puts a huge strain on the pass rush. We'll see how they get it beyond Montez Sweat on the edge. Obviously, Jonathan Allen will provide the pressure up the middle. And when asked, Ron Rivera said today he does not know the timeline. And that was partly why they did this, because they're not sure exactly how long he'd be out. So, you know, now there's at least clarity to a degree, but we'll see where we're at in a few weeks there. Other moves that were made today, because the team had to get down to 80 players, although really 81 for these guys specifically, because David Bada does not count against the main roster since he is still part of the International Pathway Program. They put Tyler Larson on the PUP list, so he's like Chase Young at least 4 games. He's been on the regular PUP list, or the training camp PUP list already, with an Achilles tear. They put Nathan Jerry on IR. They just signed him a couple of weeks ago. He is now out. They released Kelvin Harmon and tackle Rashad Hill. I know some people have asked me in recent weeks, could Kelvin Harmon make the team? And, you know, realistically, it just didn't seem logical that he would. And if you're wondering, well, why are they cutting him now as opposed to have waited? I think probably on some level, it's just a sign of, I don't know if respect is the right term, but like letting him kind of move on before the big rush. You know, I thought he had a decent camp. He and Sam Howell had a good chemistry, but that's very different than making the team. And, you know, he's not, well, whatever it is, he's gone. Obviously, Kelvin Harmon's been here for a little bit, so wish him well wherever he goes. As for one other move of note, Samus Reyes and the team agreed to a financial settlement. He obviously was placed on IR last week. It's interesting because I thought there was a chance here that the placing him on IR was to give him a chance to develop for a year, kind of a stash, but that's not the case. He is now free to sign with any team he wants. Now he can return to Washington. He has to wait a certain amount of time. It kind of depends on how big the financial settlement is, but from what I understand, it's not something that's, you know, crazy. So he could be back, but at the same point, you know, there were a lot of teams interested in him when Washington signed him last year. So, you know, it won't surprise me at all if somebody else says, hey, we'd like to bring you in. Now, obviously, there's only one preseason game left, and he's recovering from a hamstring injury, so he's not going to play for anybody. But, you know, I guess you could bring him in for practice, you know, at some point here, see where he's at. We'll see. He's got a chance to recover. So it's not definitively that his days are done here in Washington, but he does have the opportunity now to sign elsewhere. So he, and I suspect he'll have at least some kind of a market out there. We will see on that. A couple other notes here from today. Ron Rivera was asked if any of the younger players are kind of standing out to him. He starts off with Eli Wolf, another tight end who was placed on IR, who had some good receptions in the Kansas City game. I don't know what the injury is, but anyway, he's on IR. I guess a bummer there if the head coach is mentioning you. But two players who are still on the roster that Rivera mentioned. One, Dax Milne, who is, of course, in the mix for the six receiver spot and therefore the punt returner position. He also mentioned defensive end Casey Tuhill. What's interesting about Tuhill is when Rivera commented after the Kansas City game about some of his frustrations with the discipline on the defensive line, he specifically cited a play in which Patrick Mahomes was able to step into a space vacated by a defensive end who went too far up the field and threw a touchdown pass. That defensive end was Casey Tuhill. Now, obviously, one play is not make, you know, an assessment. So it's interesting, though, to see that Rivera came back and cited Tuhill as somebody he's been liking. Good. That's good there. He's a guy that is, you know, he's been a starting defensive end last year at points when Chase Young and Montez Sweat went out. He's a guy that's got athleticism to drop into coverage. So it's an interesting that he mentions him. James Smith Williams, of course, it does feel like he remains the leader to start ahead of or to start with Chase Young out. But Tuhill is sort of next in line the way I've been seeing it in practice. And, you know, good for him that he, got some attention from Ron Rivera. Rivera mentioned also Tuhill had some improved his practice habits. We actually spoke to Tuhill today. I don't know if we spoke to him last year, but very much enjoyed. It was a fun, he was a fun guest, as it were, with the media today. Just good enthusiasm. He mentioned he was asked about Ryan Kerrigan. What's it like to work with him? And he said that when he first originally arrived here, Kerrigan was still here at that point. And, you know, he was saying how it was wild to meet him and now to be around him more, because when he was in high school in band class, he, rather than paying attention to what he has to do for the saxophone, he's watching tape of Ryan Kerrigan. And, I think he probably made the right call there. He's going to make a little more money playing football than I imagine his saxophone career would have gone. So that's the kind of the news of the day. I did ask Rivera, what is he looking for from the offense at this point now that they're through two games? He said that for them, it's just consistency. He doesn't want to see the little mistakes, you know, getting in and out of the huddle, lineup formation, and then obviously, you know, penalties, things like that. He wants to see a clean situation. Now, of course, you got to make the big plays as well, but it all starts with the fundamentals. That's what he's saying he wants to see at this point. I think the last couple of days in practice, I think we've seen the offense at times make some big plays down the field. That's obviously an element that has not been it's not been on display in the games. But when I say they make some big plays down the field, it's still sort of that, you know, up and down situation that we've talked about a bunch before. But, you know, it feels like it's starting to happen a little bit more consistently with Carson Wentz getting to a Jahan Dotson or a Curtis Samuel and obviously Terry McLaurin down the field. It only will get better when Logan Thomas is able to go. Oh, I guess I didn't say that because I didn't do a podcast yesterday. So apologies for forgetting this. Logan Thomas, of course, is activated off the PUP list yesterday. Great news. He even said it's probably about a week before he imagined that it would happen. He was targeting that last preseason game, but he said that they were doing some, you know, he's been running for a while. We've seen that. They did some athletic testing specifically on the idea of jumping and landing, what kind of force he was jumping off with, and then how is he kind of landing? Is he favoring one leg or the other? And he said he figured that the left knee that had ACL and MCL surgery would be weaker than it was previously, but instead he said that the numbers showed the leg actually a bit stronger than it was this time last year in training camp, and that he the jumping and landing numbers were pretty good. They determined there's nothing else really he can do on the side field. He joined the main group. Now, he has not returned to actual practice yet. We don't know when that will happen. But he did start catching passes from Carson Wentz today on the side during like a lull in the action when the special teams took control of the field. Wentz and Thomas started getting going on the side. And obviously, they're going to have to get that chemistry going as soon as they can. They won't have a chance to do that in the preseason. Thomas won't play this week. We don't know about the starters yet. So you look at this offense, you've got Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, Curtis Samuel, and the running backs, you got Brian Robinson, Antonio Gibson, JD McKissick, in whatever order you want to put them in. You tack on Logan Thomas to that, and I mean, that really can be a special group. I really do think that. And, you know, Carson Wentz needs to get them the ball and needs to do it in a consistent way, and he's going to be pretty aggressive with his choices, but he has the pieces to be aggressive. This isn't like a couple years ago, I mentioned Kelvin Harmon, where Kelvin Harmon was like starting, right? Like, there was a few years ago, I think I mentioned this with Mark Bullock, where you had like guys like Rob Kelly having prominent roles out of the backfield. Not knocking those guys, but they're somewhat limited with their, you know, athleticism, their potential, whatever. There's no limitations here with these receivers and running backs. So attacking Logan Thomas, That's all good. Now, we'll see about the offensive line, of course. Andrew Norwell did return to practice today, as did Charles Leno. Wes Schweitzer is been out there the last couple days as well. That's all positive sign. I don't know if we'll see any of them in the preseason game, but I think that's a lot going to depend on whether Rivera wants to play Carson Wentz or not. All right, so that is what happened at practice. Today is some, you know, news, of course, with Chase Young, and that's going to be, you know, really the story to watch for this defense. How do they get by without him, and then what do we get out of him when he returns? But let's get to now more on this team. Mark Bullock and I, as I said, broke down a bunch of different positions now that he's had a chance to watch tape, and then Chef Mel joins us to say what to tell us how he got into cooking for some of these players. What does he do to help them get ready for the season? Let's do all that right now here on the Standard Groom Only podcast.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right. As promised, we're going to dive into the film with the, you know, he's like the official film breakdown dude of this podcast, has been for some time. My former teammate at The Athletic, who is now doing his own thing over on Substack. He is, of course, Mark Bullock, my guy. What I was going to say is there was nobody I was happier for that preseason started than Mark Bullock, because he's having to try to figure out what is going on with this team by watching our lousy film breakdown or our lousy videos we're posting from the sideline or the occasional highlight that the team posts. You can't figure out a lot from that. Now he's had actual game footage to chew on. I imagine for you, was it like an addict finally getting your fill? You're like, oh my God, finally.
Yeah, it was very nice to actually get some new footage and actual, you know, clear footage that wasn't someone's bad phone angle or, you know, only showed like one clip of the play or the, you know, the typical practice stuff where it's, you know, it's just a receiver running routes on air instead of like an actual like team drill where teams are running plays and actual coverages and stuff. So yes, preseason was very nice to actually get some new film to watch and instead of having to go back to last year and trying to dive into, oh, what did this player do last year and watch all of their stuff. So fresh stuff is always good. New season's always nice to dig your teeth into and get really into the season.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so obviously the newest of the new is the quarterback. New quarterback in Carson Wentz, not just a new human being, but presumably a new look with this offense because of the fact that Carson Wentz has an arm to get the ball down the field. You know, we all know Taylor Heinicke had a lot going for him. Arm strength, not necessarily a plus in his world. And that's the whole point of Carson Wentz. If you're going to feel optimistic about this offense, it's that they can open up the playbook, get the ball down the field more, et cetera. But obviously, I'm curious what you have thought so far watching two preseason games. And obviously, it's a very small sample size, but it's what we have to work with at this point. I think what stands out to me watching this so far, and this is obviously a lot of practice also, is just the weapons that they have on offense. It is striking. I was looking at some old article I wrote from a couple years ago, and you're looking at like the projections for like the 53-player roster, and especially like at receiver, you're just like, oh, my Lord. They had like nothing going on, or even like a running back a few years ago where, you know, like I used to love, like, you know, Fat Rob Burt Kelly, but like, you know, Fat Rob, but like, you know,
yeah,
he's none of the guys they currently have in the backfield, right? And just to see what they have, Logan Thomas isn't even back yet. He did, of course, was activated off the PUP list yesterday, but, you know, hasn't practiced yet, and he'll be back here at some point. Carson Wentz doesn't have to be the hero. He just has to get the ball in the hands of all these guys. But the fact that he can get the ball in their hands in different locations on the field, I think, is what makes this potentially exciting. Now that you've gotten to watch a little bit, what do you kind of sense of that aspect, just how much potential this offense actually has?
Yeah, I think there is plenty of potential there. I think the encouraging thing for me with regards to Wentz is the process of the simple things that you kind of take for granted, the process of getting in and out of the huddle, getting to the line of scrimmage, getting everyone lined up correctly, nobody doing the wrong assignments. And I think for the most part in preseason, we've seen that. And we've heard quite a few times that this offense is pretty hard to pick up for new quarterbacks. And we heard that last year with Ryan Fitzpatrick, that it was hard for him to pick up, and they struggled in preseason at times. And so I did wonder how well Wentz would adjust to this offense, having been in essentially the same offense his whole career in Philly, and then following to Frank Reich to Indy. It was pretty much the same system, pretty much the same terminology. So he had to learn a new system. And so I did wonder how he would do with that, but he seems to have adapted just fine. We haven't seen any kind of, you know, players running around not knowing what they're doing. We haven't seen them not lined up properly and Wentz waving someone over to someone else. And we've seen them get in and out of the huddle pretty quickly. We haven't seen any like delay of games and stuff like that. So I think that's the encouraging thing. I think the rest of it will come. We see an aggressive mindset from him. And I think something I've noticed is it may be more of a preseason thing just to test what their limits are, but on third downs, they're a lot more aggressive. And I think that plays to Wentz's aggressive mindset to look to attack down the field, but also Scott Turner's giving him the opportunities to look to do that and the freedom to look to do that. And third downs can be, you know, quite often everyone's just looking at getting to the first down marker and move the chains and keep the drive alive. And defenses look for that as well, which can lead to some bigger plays down the field if you're willing to take the chance of, you know, not converting. And I think the slot fade we saw to Curtis Samuel on, I think it was 3rd and 6, where he threw it down the sideline. It wasn't a bad ball, but Curtis Samuel couldn't quite hold on to it. The defender made a nice play. That is an aggressive call on third down, but it's potentially a very explosive one. And if maybe they got a little bit of a better pick from McLaurin and the defender doesn't stay with Samuel, then who knows, that could turn from a, you know, a first down conversion into maybe a touchdown. And that is the kind of explosive, aggressive mindset that I'm expecting to see from Wentz, and I'm hoping to see from this offense going into the year. And the rest of the stuff like timing with receivers and the ball placement on like when certain breaks are happening and getting it out in front of receivers, I think that'll come. You know, Wentz's accuracy issues have been well documented and almost overblown at times, but I think that stuff will come with more reps with the receivers and getting to know his receivers better. But I'm encouraged by the sort of mental aspect, the process of getting in and out of the huddle, and the process of being aggressive in certain spots where big plays are there to be made. And I think that will lead to explosive plays going into the regular season.
You talk about the aggressiveness. You know, obviously one of the knocks on Wentz is sort of this notion that he does too much hero ball, that he doesn't take sort of the layups there, meaning, you know, getting it to the running back. And, you know, we did see that on a couple of plays, like on the play, he took a sack. It looked like Antonio Gibson was open, you know, sort of in short range, didn't do that. And, you know, when he threw that on the first third down, on the first down, the first drive on the first down of the last set of downs, he threw kind of late to Curtis Samuel rather than kind of getting him out early. Okay. All that aside, the flip side of that notion is what you just said, the ability to be aggressive. And you know, look, we've lived around here for the last few years where Alex Smith, obviously there's the pre-injury and then the post-injury, but that idea of the game manager aspect, we're not going to hear game manager, right, with Carson Wentz. Now, it did kind of feel like that a little bit these first two games in terms of the fact that they didn't make the plays down the field and it was a lot more, you know, high percentage underneath stuff. But okay, but like to your point, he is willing to go down the field, and that is sort of that is the good stuff with Carson Wentz. He's not going to be afraid to do that. He's got to avoid some of the mistakes. I didn't love the fact when he said about the sack that he knew not to do that, but then instincts kicked in. That's a bad instinct, you know, if to sort of run around too much. But this is the good with the bad, and they haven't had somebody who's capable of getting the ball down the field. And that's the thing, like you know, you obviously are seeing what we're all tweeting at practice and some of the inaccuracies, but when he hits deep, it's nice. I mean, it is like what, you know, it's the type of highlight you're like, oh, like get me the 11 jersey. Like that guy looks really good. And that is what's going to be interesting. And again, you know, he's got the weapons to do it. So when you're tangibly, you talk about some of the grass, what else do you sort of tangibly notice difference they're not game planning yet, but tangibly no difference with the offensive play calls or the routes or anything with Wentz in there, or maybe you don't yet.
Yeah, it's tough to say because it's preseason and they don't really game plan for specific opponents, and so they're trying out different things and they're seeing what they can get away with. So it's not like they're specifically trying to scheme up, you know, Terry McLaurin in the slot against the linebacker, or Curtis Samuel against a certain corner, or Jahan Dotson against a certain corner. You know, they're not trying to scheme that stuff up. So it's tough to say on that regard with in preseason, but. I would like to expand on the Wentz sack that everyone's been talking about. If you'll let me spend a few minutes on that. That sack, I think, yes, it was a bad play from Wentz, but I think fans kind of underappreciate just how much goes into that play happening. Because there was a bunch of mistakes that compounded into that sack. And the first mistake was that they thought a blitz was coming off the left side of the line. So Wentz slid the line that way, which left Armani Rogers, the tight end, blocking the defensive end one-on-one. And so when that blitz didn't come, Rogers was left one-on-one and you know, Sam Cosmi came across to try to help out. And that worked for a stage and Carson Wentz was able to step up, but then the defender spun out and sacked him. But on top of that, they had, what that meant was Rogers wasn't able to work out into the flat as he was meant to do. They were running a sail concept to that side, and the tight end was meant to chip the edge rusher and move out into the flat as the receiver in the flat to force the flat defender to sink into the flat and leave the sail route open deeper. And so without that threat in the flat, Wentz didn't have his check down option and they didn't have anything to stop the flat defender from sinking back. And then they had another issue with Jahan Dotson on the outside. He took an inside release instead of an outside release, and that allowed the flat defender to kind of look like he was in man coverage instead of zone, and that muddied the read for Wentz a little bit. So there was a lot that went into Wentz staying on a read that he probably shouldn't have been staying on, and that caused him to roll out to the right thinking he was going to have that. Now, obviously, once he gets to that point, he makes a terrible decision to double back on himself and try to roll out to the left. At that point, he should either just try to outrun the defenders and pick up as many yards as he can running, or just throw the ball away. And he compounds those mistakes by turning back inside and getting himself sacked. But I think it's worth pointing out that play, I saw Wentz getting so much stick, and especially from like Colts fans and Eagles fans being like, oh, it's the same old Wentz. And to a degree, yes, he did make that mistake, but there was a lot of other mistakes that led into him making that mistake. And so it wasn't just a result of Wentz being this idiot running back inside into a sack. There was a lot of other things going on within the play that muddied the read for him and led him to making a poor decision to work back across the field and get sacked. So,
why everybody calls Mark the nicest film breakdown analyst guy out there. No, I hear you. I mean, you know, it's never just one thing. And it's a point even that, you know, when we're talking about, hey, Wentz missed a receiver on a route in practice. I don't know what the call was. Did the receiver run 7 yards and they should have run 9, or, you know, those types of things. But like I said, this is the, when you're aggressive, part of that is you're trying to, you're taking that extra beat to figure out how to make a play. And it can lead to some of these things. The hope is you countered enough with enough of the big plays down the field. The Curtis Samuel play you mentioned, that guy gets the ball, right? You know, and yep. Then, it, you know, you kind of go from there. As we just said, you know, there's no game planning here, right? So everybody is just sort of running routes based on just kind of running a route. What have you thought about it from that perspective? And particular, I guess, Jahan Dotson, because that's another new guy here for you to have some fun with. You know, you've seen all the praise. We've all been singing it during camp. He's just incredibly composed and mature. It looks like both as a human, but also as a receiver. He's already like, we've all stopped discussing like what's the first round pick doing, because it feels like it's already baked in that he knows what's up. And he's already proven to be pretty competent. But of course, the question will be when other teams are planning for him and, you know, able to, you know, how that he's not the biggest guy, all things like that. How do you defend him? what have you liked about him so far? I shouldn't say what if you like. Maybe you don't like it, but I imagine you do.
Yeah, in general, I've liked what he's done. And I was more impressed with him against the Panthers in the opener, even though he didn't get a catch. He was still running open a lot more often. And often he was kind of the second or the third read, and Wentz didn't need to get to him. Obviously, there was the play where Wentz took the shot to him and he kind of got grabbed, and Terry McLaurin on the other side of the field also got grabbed, and they called pass interference, and that stopped him from getting the catch. But there was other plays. He had a very nice route on a crossing route over the middle where he broke away from his defender and left him for dirt and was 2 or 3 yards open wide over the middle. But Wentz had already thrown the ball to the other side. So I'm impressed with him. He seems to be a really smooth and polished receiver already. He has still made a few mistakes. As I mentioned on that Wentz sack, he made a mistake of taking an inside release instead of an outside release. And that might not seem like such a big thing, but it leads to very muddied reads, and it leads to the kind of the chat from fans that, oh, these routes are all being run too close together. Well, that they're not meant to be done that way. It was a mistake from one of the receivers. So that still leads to, you know, he is still a rookie. He's not necessarily going to be Terry McLaurin straight away, but I think there is certainly some promise there, and you see some good route running. You see, we'd obviously like to see him get the ball a little bit more, but I guess we'll have to wait till the season to see that, because we haven't seen him have the ball thrown to him that often yet. But even when he's not getting the ball, we're seeing good, solid routes from him, some nice separation, and just general good play from him. And I'm encouraged by that. And I think in general, he'll be a pretty solid receiver straight away.
Yeah, no, I mean, he looks pretty good. He's to me, he's clearly the second receiver at this point. McLaurin on one side, he's on the other, and Samuel in the slot, and you kind of figure it out. I'm not going to put too much into what happened in this game, but when you have three receivers who are all roughly the same height, as we know, Carson Wentz likes throwing the tight end. Maybe part of that is the route runs, but also I would imagine it's the size of the player. And that's why I can see like Cam Sims maybe not becoming the third receiver, but having a larger role like that, to a degree than maybe we think. But we'll see what happens. Obviously, they have hope for Samuel. I'm not suggesting he's going to get benched or anything. I just mean, at some point, how do you shake up that group? And if McLaurin and Dotson are out there, we'll see. The notion of Wentz throwing to the tight ends, if you had never looked up a stat that showed that since he entered the league, basically only Lamar Jackson throws to the tight end more than Wentz, if you had never looked at that, all you needed to know in that very first preseason game, he throws his first pass to Curtis Samuel, and the next four go to Armani Rogers, a guy who was number 7 on the depth chart when they started training camp, who played college quarterback last year, and Wentz is like, I don't care, I'm going that guy. And Rogers has done fine. He's looked pretty good, but like that is saying something about a preference. If you're going to that guy in your first game, like why do you think Wentz does go to the tight end so much? I mean, I don't know if you've been able to tell through these games. Obviously, you watched some of the tape previously, but because I think Logan Thomas is poised to have a pretty big year, assuming he's healthy, just for that reason.
Yeah, he certainly does have a preference for the tight ends. I would say in the scenario of preseason where he went to Armani Rogers, I can't fault him for the process he did. It wasn't necessarily that he was going pre-snap, I'm going to the tight end and nothing else. That like he did go through his progressions, and they took him to Rogers and they took him to the tight ends. And so I don't necessarily think it was a bad thing that he was going to Armani Rogers. It was just that's just what happened. But yes, he certainly does have a preference for the tight ends. And typically it's a guy like Zach Ertz or Logan Thomas that, you know, has a nice catch radius. And I would think part of that is due to Wentz has he can have some really sloppy mechanics at times. And that can lead to the kind of accuracy issues that we've heard and talked about all training camp and preseason so far, where, sometimes he can sail the ball and sometimes he can be a little bit placed in different positions, and having a target that has good catch radius is like a tight end, a big tight end, a 6'6" tight end like Logan Thomas or Zach Ertz or even Cole Turner, who they drafted. Those guys with big catch radius are are very important to that kind of quarterback. And that's why we've heard that catch radius being the kind of buzz term from this team the whole offseason, you know, even with Jahan Dotson, Ron Rivera has talked about catch radius and they're not dumb. They're not blind to the fact that Wentz can be inaccurate at times. And there's a reason why they've targeted these catch radius guys. Like, even though Jahan Dotson is shorter, he still has a good catch radius, and Terry McLaurin can still go up and win jump balls. And as I say, Cole Turner was known in college for his catch radius and stuff. So there's a reason why they targeted those kind of players. And it was to suit Carson Wentz, because he does need those kind of players. And I think it just so happens that typically those kind of players are tight ends, because they're bigger bodied guys that have, you know, longer arms, bigger reach, and the athletic tight ends can have a larger catch radius than some receivers. So I think that's mainly why he has a preference for tight ends.
Yes. Catch radius is definitely the term of the year. And I imagine we'll hear it plenty, assuming that Dotson and others, have good success and are catching those passes. You're like, yeah, where's that going? Oh, okay. Got it. We're all good there. All right, let's get to the running backs. I don't know if you've heard about this, but we may have a changing of the guard here. It's changing of the guard. Am I allowed to say that to a Brit? Is that fair?
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fine.
Great. I go back to, just to pat myself on the back a little bit, go back to pre-draft and pre-free agency. You know, I was talking a lot about they're going to look to add another running back. That was the feeling I had. And part of it was that, as talented as Antonio Gibson is, that he was a bit miscast in this lead back, you know, sort of traditional run through, you know, between the tackle type guy. And, you know, you look at some of the analytics, he's leaving yards on the table, all that stuff. And to me, it always made sense. Like, it always felt like through these first 2 years, like, why aren't they getting the ball more in space? Like that screen pass against the Bills that he took to the house, you know, more of that. And part of it is, well, they have McKissick, and I don't know, part of it is that they want to run the ball and whatever. So they obviously get Brian Robinson in the third round. And, you know, from the moment we started watching Robinson practice with this team, you could see it was a different type of back. Robinson is much more of the traditional early down back. I've really been impressed with watching him sort of stay parallel to the line. It keeps his shoulders forward and is able to attack. And, you know, Scott Turner said the other day that even when he maybe misses a lane or two, he runs so hard that he's able to get something out of it. And obviously with Gibson, it's not been that case. And we saw some of that even play out in this game last week, his first carry, you know, not saying it was completely his fault, but, like, you know, he loses a yard or two, and Robinson on that play seemingly moves forward. I actually think we talk so much about, wow, it's hard to believe that this is happening. I actually think this is probably the best thing overall, that Robinson is the better early down back, that McKissick is the change of pace guy, but that Gibson is sort of the hybrid of the two. And the question for me will be, how do they figure out how to utilize him? I think we saw it a little bit in this last game where they're able to get him one-on-one down the field a bit, you know, swing him out, line him up at receiver to some degree. I think that's the way to go. That said, it is still jarring that we haven't even gotten to the start of the year and Antonio Gibson may already not be RB1 here. What have you seen out of that? Do you kind of like where this may be heading?
Yeah, I think the case of Antonio Gibson is really interesting, because when he was drafted, he was this kind of receiver that they were going to try at running back. And the feeling that I got was they were making him play running back so he could learn the running back position, and they didn't want to put too much on his plate and like have him do the receiving stuff in case he, you know, was spending too much time doing that and not learning how to be a running back. And we saw him improve as a running back as a result of that. And I think, you know, with the athleticism that he has at his size, what is he, like 6'2", 230 or something like that? That's a rare size and rare combination of size and athletic ability. And that should lead to explosive plays from the running back position. And obviously we haven't had that from him. So there is a kind of, a, I guess, a cutoff point with how long you persist with him being the lead back, and hoping that explosiveness comes. And obviously the fumbling issues kind of accelerated that, that cutoff point. And Brian Robinson is a very good running back, and certainly a workhorse back that is more than capable of taking a heavy workload. And I think he offers a lot more scheme flexibility, because Gibson was very much a zone runner. He struggled with you know, gap scheme runs where he had to read things out. The zone scheme suited him a lot better because it's a little bit easier for on running backs with terms of reads. And he still missed some of those reads and left some yards. You're absolutely right. But he was much better with that. And so Robinson isn't quite as good a zone runner, and zone scheme is what they rely on. But Robinson is a solid zone runner, and he's a very good gap runner, and it allows them to the flexibility to use some gap scheme, you know, power and duo and counter and stuff, that if they come up against a team that is playing their front to take away those zone schemes, that gives them an option to still, instead of running into that for 1 or 2 yards every first down, they can go, okay, well, we'll change a different scheme because we've got a back that can use a different scheme. Now, the question for me is, with Antonio Gibson in this kind of hybrid role, I think that role can suit him. It's a question is he better at that kind of role than either JD McKissic or Curtis Samuel? Because obviously both of those guys were kind of hybrid guys in college, and McKissic was, you know, that receiver that became a running back, and Curtis Samuel was a running back that kind of came a receiver. So
this is why when McKissic we thought was leaving, I was like, oh, okay, this actually kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Open it for Gibson to do this thing, and you still have Samuel, who, you know, he gets touches out of the backfield. Obviously last year we just barely saw him at all, but like,
sure,
go back to his Carolina days, he did get snaps back there. And that's why it is, I think you're right, like the fantasy football people are like desperate to know, you know, who to draft and when. But that is what's going to be fascinating. You can't, if assuming everybody stays healthy, they can't all get the work, and you do have to make a call here, which guy is best suited to get more work. I don't think Gibson is, you can't just have Gibson be a guy who gets like 6-7 touches a game. On the other hand, then what? Like, who is not getting the ball? And that's what's going to be interesting.
Yeah, because for me, JD McKissic is obviously very good in the role that he does, and he's an excellent third down back. He's a better pass protector than Gibson is at this point, and I think he's a better route runner than Gibson is at this point. So I don't see Gibson taking that third down back role from McKissic anytime soon. And, you know, Curtis Samuel is just an outright better receiver than Antonio Gibson. And I guess some people would probably argue he's a better runner than Gibson as well. So are you going to take Curtis Samuel off the field to give Antonio Gibson touches as kind of that hybrid running back slot receiver move guy? Maybe. And maybe that's a way you help keep Curtis Samuel healthy and on a kind of a pitch count, possibly. But I think in an ideal world, Curtis Samuel's your number one guy for that kind of slot receiver hybrid guy, and JD McKissic's your number one guy for the third down back role. And that leaves Antonio Gibson as he's either got to be the number one running back or he's got to be the backup to the other two guys, and that takes him off the field, unless they come up with some other package where they have multiple running backs and they put three guys in the backfield with Gibson, McKissic, and Samuel, and who knows who's going to get the ball. But
let's go for from wishbone. Come on.
I don't know how often they're going to run that kind of thing. That might be a very rare occasional trick play, but that's not a sustainable, you know, package that you're going to use every week. So I think that is the fascinating thing with Gibson here is I think the storyline now is, yes, Gibson can kind of transfer to that hybrid role, but is he good enough to displace either McKissic or Samuel? Because those are the two guys that he would have to replace, and I don't think he is. So I think this, if he's not going to take a kind of a fair share of the snaps from Robinson, and Robinson has proven that in this game that he took his opportunity and could be a good workhorse back. And, you know, he has that history of Alabama where, you know, Alabama running backs tend to do pretty well in the NFL, and they tend to be able to be reliable workhorses and, you know, they can lean on him. Then it's tough to see exactly where Gibson gets his touches now.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. And obviously, you know, the third running back is going to have to play special teams just in terms of like the pure number of people that's a role. You know, we wouldn't think twice about it if it was Jared Patterson. When it's Antonio Gibson, you're like, wait, what? Even if it was Brian Robinson, we'd be like, okay, he's a rookie, that's fine. Gibson did return a kick, of course, the other day, and it may end up being a more featured role. They don't have, you know, there's no, like, it's not like there's an obvious guy back there, and he would be a pretty intriguing player there. So we don't need to assess him as a kick returner per se, but yeah, it's really going to be interesting to see how they work this out. And I don't want to, I think from a positive perspective, like I'm saying, Carson Wentz has plenty of weapons. The question will be, how do you get everybody involved? And you can't just say, well, we have all these things. How do you do it in a creative way that keeps everybody satisfied and maximizes everybody's usage? It will be really interesting to see. And obviously, of course, we eventually have to get the offensive line back. The top three guards are obviously all out this last game. We don't have to get into the line play per se, but that's going to be a huge thing to watch here. And I am, I think somewhat, I just did a story up on The Athletic this morning. I did like a depth chart review and I ranked the positions from least to most concerning. And I put interior offensive line like pretty near the bottom, because at this point, Andrew Norwell, Trey Turner, yeah, they've got some Pro Bowls and All-Pro stuff on their resumes, but that's been a minute. They've got some injury concerns on their resume. And now, you know, Turner hasn't practiced in almost a month. Norwell's been out a week. Schweitzer's had injuries as well. He, you know, doesn't seem like what he had the other day is a huge deal. But there's some concern there for me, especially when the offensive line lacks a star at this point, right? There's no more Scherf. There's no more Trent Williams. So we'll see how obviously all that plays into things as well. Let's go over to the defense in the time I have left with you. We talked about how this was watching the film was a chance for you to see something new. I don't think it was new to say that their third down defense was problematic again. And look, obviously we can make the excuse that it's Patrick Mahomes and there's only so much you can do. And I think it's fair, right? He's rolling out, he's scrambling, he's throwing sidearm, cockamamie throws, finding guys. And that's going to happen when you're facing arguably the best quarterback in the league. But as we know, it doesn't matter. Giving up your first five third down conversions, not good. And then the game before against Baker Mayfield, same thing. Carolina converted their first three. Bad luck? Good play by the quarterbacks? Or are you seeing the same kind of issues that were happening last year?
In the first week against the Panthers, we saw the same kind of issues that were happening last year. We saw the kind of miscommunications. And obviously that opening drive was the only drive that the Panthers played all their starters. And obviously after that, they switched from Baker Mayfield to Sam Darnold and they brought in a couple of other backups and stuff. So it was a mix at that point. But on the opening drive, they gave up three of the first four third down attempts. Yeah. And so the first one was a result of a miscommunication. I think pretty much everyone was playing man coverage apart from Danny Johnson was playing zone, and the slot receiver kind of ran away from everyone because Danny Johnson wasn't running with him. And that led to a first down. The second one was a third and short run, which they just didn't fit very well. I think Daron Payne kind of got knocked out of a gap, which was surprising for him. Normally he's very stout in there, but I think he tried to kind of shoot the gap a little bit and got knocked out. And that left a big hole in the middle. And then the third one, Danny Johnson again got beat in the slot, and it was a sort of quick seam concept where the tight end runs a shallow cross to vacate the middle of the field, and then that leaves the slot receiver one-on-one against the slot corner, and Johnson got opened up with a fake outside and beat inside. So they had some issues with obviously miscommunication and a few individual errors and stuff. So that was a repeat of last year. This week, the first few plays were, to me, more on the call than anything else. They had that third and 10 blitz where Del Rio sent the slot corner and I think safety as well after Mahomes. And Mahomes, the whole of last year, like, yes, you don't game plan for things in the preseason. That is a good caveat, and you don't game plan for preseason. You're not doing like specific work on the opponent to go, well, Mahomes is strong against the blitz and you need to drop into coverage. You don't worry about that stuff. But the whole last season, the whole theme of the Chiefs last year was Mahomes absolutely shreds anyone that blitzes him, and he struggles when you play lots of coverage. And so on third and 10, to then send six guys on a rush, both a safety and a slot corner and the front four, and then that leaves Cam Curl playing kind of a hybrid linebacker role to have to try to sprint out to cover the slot receiver up the seam, that is not a nice call for his defense. That doesn't put his defense in a great position. And again, it might have just been trying something in preseason to see what he could get away with. And it just happened to be that they were playing Mahomes, but that shredded them then. But after that, I actually thought the coverage unit played well. And I wrote about that this morning, a day of recording anyway, that but the coverage unit played well, and they were let down by a lack of containment. And they were doing really well passing off routes and covering things initially, and Mahomes had nowhere to go with the ball. And Montez Sweat and Jonathan Allen were consistently generating pressure off of one side. The issue would be typically the defensive end on the other side was not containing Mahomes in the pocket. And then that would allow Mahomes to either roll out or, you know, escape the pocket. And I think on a couple of times, James Smith-Williams was the defensive end on the other side, and he dipped inside rather than containing on the edge, and that allowed Mahomes to roll out. And another time it was on the second touchdown, it was Casey Tuhill got run Rivera, by.
Right. Rivera, and Rivera called that one out specifically as to, you know, Mahomes stepped into the space that Tuhill weren't too far up the field. And you know, even with Cam Curl defending the tight end pretty well, he was able to, you know, fire it in there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. All right. Let's do this really quick, because I'm keeping you too long, and you've got a busy life over there. Let's go through each level of the defense. I'll ask you a quick question and just give me like a 30-second or so response. And the defensive line, you mentioned, okay, so we don't know when Chase Young is coming back. It's at least out week one. I'm going to guess it could be 3 to 6 weeks. We'll see. So somebody else has to fill in. James Smith-Williams has been primarily the guy that they've been starting. You've got Smith-Williams, you got Tuhill, you got F.A. Obada, and we'll see. Do Shaka Toney, William Bradley King, one or both of them make the roster? I don't know if both can make it, but one of them. If you could pick any one of them to be the guy to start opposite Sweat, maybe at least from the perspective of getting a pass rush or whatever for you is the biggest thing, who would you go with?
I think the more stout player would be Smith-Williams. But as I say, he got knocked out of his gap a few times where he made the decision to jump inside when he should have played contain. So there was a little bit of a lack of awareness from him. I think he gives them the best pass rush option, though, with the caveat of Shaka Toney, obviously, is the most explosive player, but we've still not seen him really take on top quality NFL offensive lineman. So I think he would be the guy. I would still personally like to see them add a veteran that could be a little bit more reliable in that regard. Casey Tuhill is kind of this hybrid guy that is someone that they don't mind dropping into coverage when they want to use a blitz scheme and send a linebacker inside and have the edge drop off. And he's useful at that, and he's a solid run defender. So if they want to go that route and kind of generate more pressure from blitzes and stuff, then that would be the route to go. But I think if you want to just rush the front four, James Smith-Williams, if he can improve his kind of discipline and his rush discipline, that would be the guy I'd go for.
You know, Shaka Toney had a 1.5 sacks in this game, but it was against the deeper backups. To my eye watching practice, I kept feeling like William Bradley King and Bunmi Rutini, I just seemed to notice them more whether it was drills or practices than I was Shaka Toney. But obviously Tony's the one that made the team outright last year and had the sack, so we'll see how they go there. Let's go to the secondary. The starting four is back, plus then a bunch of sort of younger guy random pieces behind them. They have a ton of position flexibility at safety. That seems obvious. They can move guys all over the place, so I think that's good. What do you like? What has stood out to you, I guess, just watching the secondary, whether it's a player, a better communication, whatever, what's the thing that stood out to you so far?
I would say that Bobby McCain and Cam Curl as a safety partnership is really developing nicely. And the communication in general is better back there because those two are more solid and those two are understanding better what they're doing and can trust the guys outside are knowing what they're doing. And we saw that last week with Bobby McCain. Came down and attacked a crossing route, and he trusted William Jackson to peel off and place him deep. And Jackson did that, and that took away the crossing route. So while keeping them safe against deeper shots. So I'm seeing a lot better sort of communication amongst the starting four. And I think Bob McCain has started really well this preseason and looks really good. And his communication with Cam Curl, I was kind of talking about it with the third downs earlier against the Chiefs, but we saw them passing off routes a lot better. And that was an issue for them last year where McCain and Collins weren't on the same page and they weren't passing off routes very well. Whereas Cam Curl can be relied on back there and those two have much better communication and they were passing off routes between each other very well. And that leads to, you know, receivers not running open quite so often.
And I'll put you on the spot with this. you both have only been watching a couple games. I think St. Juice didn't even play in the first game. So he's a cover corner, maybe the biggest slot corner in the league. And then you have the other nickel is Derek Forrest, which gives you more of that run defender-y type guy, though he's been playing a bit in the back end with Cam Curl closer to the line. Which one do you think is going to be more the most effective lineup for this group? The St. Juice as the cover corner in the slot at 6'3", or Forrest with would give you that free safety look they had last year? Do you prefer one or the other? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think for me, St. Juice is the better overall player. Schematically, like it can that position can kind of switch between those two fairly easily. I think the upside of St. Juice with his size that he could play those different spots, like being the bigger nickel and covering bigger tight ends, or also matching up against slot receivers. I would just like to see him be allowed to sit on the line of scrimmage and press a little bit more, because that's what he does best. But I think he's the better overall player than Forrest for me. I think Forrest has shown some nice energy and a few big hits, but I think he still gets a little bit lost in coverage at times and gets beaten a few times. So for me, St. Juice is the better player. So that's where I would go with the nickel package.
All right, last but not least, this is going to make or break how people feel about this team. Jamin Davis. I mean, in the story I just did about ranking the depth, the positions like most to least to most concerning, I put linebacker last. Now, I am factoring in depth, and that this is probably my bigger issue here, but also like what's the upside, right? Like, even if there's some concerns at some other spots, like I just sort of get what the upside is. I still feel like the upside with this group is unclear to a degree. Cole Holcomb's a solid guy, but he's not going to be much more than that. Jamin Davis and the depth, I mean, you know, I don't know what you think, but like, you know, David Mayo looks like he can play here and there, but Kalik Hudson's had a pretty quiet training camp. And after that, you know, Nathan Jerry, you know, whatever. Jamin Davis is going to swing this thing one way or the other, not just this group, but this whole defense, I think, because if he's able to be, it doesn't have to be Lawrence Taylor or anything, but can he be a solid guy on the field out there for reasons beyond he was the 19th pick in the draft last year? I do think we've seen progress. I do think he looks more confident, particularly when he's at the line of scrimmage, when they just have him sort of attacking the line. Coverage, I think is going to be a huge component for this. I know there was that one play I mentioned, I don't know if it was here on the radio, but on the second touchdown drive for Kansas City, their running back, Mahomes throws a little pass to the running back, and the running back runs inside the 10. Jamin Davis looked like he was sort of caught up in between. He didn't know whether to attack Mahomes or whether to cover. Okay. That to me, though, is going to be huge for this defense as much as anything other than Chase Young returning. So Jamin Davis, are you signaling a resurgence, or are you still questioning what's going on here?
I'm still questioning it a little bit. I will say he is a million miles better than what he was at this point last year. I would still say he is quite a ways away from what you would expect from a first round pick, because last year, he was just frozen at the snap, trying to process everything going on and read where he was meant to be. This year, he still can be a little bit slow at times, but he's playing a lot faster, and he's not necessarily always hitting the exact right spot. Like sometimes he'll read the pulling guard and he'll quickly attack his gap, but he'll attack the wrong shoulder of the guard. And those are small details that he will pick up as he plays more and progresses. And that's fine. But the encouraging part is that he is getting to the gap and meeting the guard in the hole rather than, you know, letting the guard work through the hole and 5 yards down the field and meeting him up there. So he's playing a lot faster. But he's not, as you mentioned, that play, I was going to bring that play up where he was kind of, I think what he had was man coverage responsibilities on the running back, and he thought the back was staying in to protect. So he started to blitz, and then the back released, and he kind of paused and was like, oh, should I run with this? Should I attack? And then decided to blitz and left the back wide open. And so there is still little mistakes like that where he's not 100% sure exactly what he's doing and gets his reads wrong. So I still think he's not quite the player that they would like him to be. Certainly not the first round pick that they were hoping to get, but I think there are positive steps forward. I do question this kind of blitz role, this linebacker rush linebacker role that everyone kind of wants him to be Michael Parsons. And the reason Parsons is so good is because he has natural bend on the edge and has explosive bend and has some pass rush moves. Jamie Davis is an athletic guy, but he doesn't have that natural bend that Parsons has coming off the edge. And he doesn't, I've yet to really seen real good pass rush moves from him. Like he had a couple of blitzes in this game where the offensive lineman just picked him up very easy. And he had no secondary rush. So I still question exactly what his role is going to be. But I do think there are some encouraging signs. He's playing a lot faster than he was last year. And hopefully with more playing time, he'll pick up like the smaller details of I need to attack this shoulder of the guard, or I need to be in this gap rather than that gap. And that will see him progress into being the player they hoped he could be.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think if I'm right on the play you mentioned before, the play where they blitzed St. Juice and Derek Forrest from the Mahomes' right side. If I looked at that right, I think Jamin Davis was playing basically defensive end on the other side on that play. And I almost wonder on some level, is this a way for them to, with questions about the other defensive end, like a way to, you know, go with the three obvious defensive linemen, have Jamin Davis to some degree play and a little bit, and then have, you know, six defensive backs, especially if you're going up against, you know, whatever, four receivers or you know, a dynamic sure. quarterback. But you're right. I mean, I think there's reason to be optimistic. And at the same point, you know, we'll see how this goes for sure. All right, Mark, I've kept you long enough. At Mark Bullock NFL on Twitter. Go find him. MarkBullock.substack.com. To go find his film breakdowns. Obviously it's a great read always. And anything else we need to know? You know life okay across the pond? You guys are you know, we're happy with the we got a World Cup coming up soon, right? Our US and Britain are in the same group, right?
Yes, we are playing the US in the World Cup is it November, I think. So
will you be breaking down those types of X's and O's ahead of the World Cup?
I think there's plenty of people in the soccer world that can do that better than I can. So I probably won't be doing that, but I will certainly be, I'll be very quiet if the US somehow happens to win that game. And I will be very loud on Twitter if England manages to win that game as I expect them to.
All right. Well, we may have to have you, but we'll obviously have you back on regardless, but we'll have to have you back on ahead of that to discuss that, maybe figure out a wager or something along the way. Dude, I appreciate it. Great catching up. Glad you got some film to break down. We'll talk soon.
Of course. Anytime.
All right. Joining me here on the podcast, we are practice is about to start. We're standing here a few feet away from the field. This is everybody's favorite person out here because everybody, what does everybody want most in life? Food.
They want food.
Food. And this is the guy who's given it, he brings us food sometimes, but he's also supplying food for some of the players out here. He is, of course, the great Chef Mel. My guy, you are. It's early morning, but you're out here. You're ready to go.
Yeah.
And like for me, it's just getting started. What time did you get up today to start making?
I'm up every morning at 4 o'clock. I'm up every morning at 4 o'clock and then at night. I just basically like all day just in the kitchen. And then if I'm not in the kitchen, I'm out here right now seeing these guys and checking them out and seeing how much fuel I need to put back in them, you know, as they practice.
I mean, you've got your own catering business, but you also work with players. You've been doing this for a lot. You worked with Landon Collins in the past. Mm-hmm. You worked with Antonio Gibson, and you were there for him to try to figure out how to get his weight down and get in some better shape coming out here. How did you first get into this where you became, like, you're more of a staple here than anybody here, other than maybe John Kime. Like, how did you kind of get sort of behind the doors to get in with these guys?
Oh, man, I just work with these guys, man. These guys trust me to work with them and fuel them with the right foods and stuff like that for their diets. So it's basically like these guys are trusting me, and I just want to be there for them to make sure that they just stay here and have longevity with playing time.
Who was the first guy that you had?
Oh, man, you want to go back in the crates now. That's like, man, I go back down to Chris Samuels, man.
Okay. Yeah, wow. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So you're making food. It's like, it's one thing if, like, you're at a sort of a meal hall situation, uh-huh. and they're making food for all 50 guys, 90 guys, whatever we're at. You're doing it, though, and so everybody kind of gets the same stuff to a degree, but you're doing individual portions, and it's very different. You mentioned Chris Samuel. I know Keith Ishmael is one of your guys, so we're talking a big lineman, and then you've got Gibson. So I assume these meals are very different, both in terms of the food they want, but also just the concept of the food.
Yeah, so what I do is everybody has a different diet and stuff like that. It needs a lot of people pump up a lot of carbs. Everybody has to have carbs and stuff. But the thing is, it's about, like, you know, putting certain vegetables in your body, certain proteins. And that's where, like, you know, from the linemen to the defense and everything, everybody has different diets. But at the end of the day, it's all good nutrients that's going in their body.
What? So, like, give me an example for, like, Gibson. So, like, he obviously this year, this offseason, he worked on losing some weight.
I did a lot of vegetables with him. I did a lot of vegetables with Gibson. I wanted him to be a little more leaner so he could run a little faster and everything. So cut down on the weight so his running game could be explosive and fast at the same time.
But, like, obviously, you're talking to him about, like, what food he likes. Like, what's his favorite thing that he wants that's good?
He eats good and stuff like that. I basically have him on a clean diet, like, so fish, veggies, that type of thing. I have him on. That's typically all the guys. Like, you know, between fish and a couple of red meats, that's about it.
So do you do all their meals over the course of a day or only, like, the first and the end?
It all depends. It all depends on what they need because, like, they get some stuff from the facility, and then I get them after the facility. Once they leave, I make sure when they get home, they have a meal for them in the morning or at night.
So tell me, like, what did you make today? Like, how many different things did you make today? What did you make?
I made so many different meals, man. So I made some bison. I made some eggs, some omelet. Make, you know, like, omelet, I put vegetables in it, like zucchini squash and everything. You want to get your nutrients, like your vegetables, in the morning. The morning is the best time to really consume the vegetables, at night, in the morning. You want to get your protein really in the midday. So your body could break it down more.
I'm taking mental notes here because I've been on this planet for a long minute. I still don't know anything. Go ahead.
So, like, you know, like, you can still have protein at night, but I recommend protein in the midday, heavy on the protein in the midday, especially if you're an athlete. You want, like, a heavy on the protein in the midday so your bones, the collagen, everything can build up. And then in the nighttime, you want to kind of go with the veggies. But so, if you're a big guy, like, you want to stay here and go with the both.
So, like, for a guy like Keith Ishmael, who's trying to keep on weight, I presume, what's, like, the calorie difference, like, what you're giving him versus, like, what you're giving Gibson?
So, with Keith is, he's more on the vegetarian side. He's more, like, veggie side. But he does do a little protein, but he cut down on his protein and getting his protein from vegetable side.
So what's the most random food that somebody has said, hey, can you make this? And you're like, wait, what? What's going on here? What meal do you want?
Nothing really random. Everybody's pretty simple and everything in basic. So it's like really nothing. It's basically like meat and potatoes.
Not a lot of foodies out here is what you're saying?
No, there's foodies. But, you know, these guys, you know, they typically eat the same thing. You know, they want the same thing. Sometimes you get a request for certain things that, you know, like, they probably like, they want their favorites or whatever. But other than that, they just want to just eat good and healthy.
What?
I love that.
for sure. Well, I mean, look, you know, we've all mentioned you on Twitter before. You were mentioned in the Washington Post story about Gibson losing some weight. What's that all meant for you in terms of what your, you know, your career and how is being around these guys? Like, how has that kind of been interesting for you?
Oh man, it's been pretty good, man. It was really a big thing for me to actually even work with him on that. And being in the Washington Post, that was a pretty big deal for me.
for sure. And when you, like, so Gibson's out here, obviously, and, you know, some of your other clients as well. What's it like watching them and seeing them kind of go through this, knowing that, you know, in some way you're kind of helping them achieve what they're trying to do?
Man, I am so happy, man. I love to see these guys. I like watching them guys out here on the field and seeing them being productive. Because, like I said, they really take this game really seriously, even what they're doing with their body. So I really enjoy that. So seeing them on the field just make me get back in the kitchen to cook even better for them.
Yeah. All right, give me a little tip here. So chicken, that's always, like, sort of my go-to. I'm the worst cook. I'm just not an inspired cook. What's a meal that I can make or that people are listening
You can make some chicken.
Well, what am I doing with the chicken?
So many flavors you can put with chicken. Chicken, you know, you can have chicken so many different ways, so many different flavors. You can saute chicken, you can say fried chicken, you can say hand baked chicken. And then also, the big thing is chicken wings. Everybody loves chicken wings.
Sure.
So is this the thing? You like flats or drums? Which one you like?
Drums.
Oh, man. Everybody's gonna get at you because everybody like flats. The majority of people like flats.
Yeah, I know that boneless wings are not real chicken wings, but honestly, like, I feel the same way about chicken wings and with crabs to a degree. It's like, it's a lot of mess for not a lot. So I don't mind the basics, but everybody can yell at me. Go ahead.
So what's your flavor though? What's your flavor? Lemon pepper, like.
Lim Harper's a bad barbecue. I was like putting paprika on things. Somewhere in there. I'm not the world's
paprika
like
most. Paprika is like in a lot of ingredients.
Yeah.
You see that red in any seasons? That's paprika in there. That's what it is.
Yeah. Paprika is like my go-to on the chicken. All right. So just tell me that, or just how about this? What's a meal you've made lately for these guys that would be like, if people are listening, like, I need to get in some better food shape. What's something that people could like make? You think relatively easily?
Well, bison is one thing that people sleep on. It has a lot of protein. It's heavy in the protein.
Yeah.
It has like 53 grams of protein, so that's really good for you. It's lean. You don't want to overcook that. You want to actually just get it in and out the pan quick as possible, but you want to put that flavor to it. You can put some fresh herbs and everything in it to get that flavor, a little bit of butter, and you're good to go.
Chef Mel, tell everybody.
I can't give everybody all my ingredients.
No, that's fair. I understand. I understood. They can't ask a magician how he does everything. Tell everybody where they can find you if they want to get involved with you, either in, I don't know, a personal way or a catering way.
I'm outside. They can find me everywhere.
Literally, that is true. I've seen you in many places randomly. But what's your
Chef Mel? Chef Mel, the mailman. It's MEL on Instagram. And then the same thing on Twitter. So, yeah, you'll be able to find me.
All right. Well, look, these million-dollar athletes are trusting this guy to help them out. So, you know, I'd say hit Chef Mel up. I've had the food. It's very good stuff. My guy, I appreciate it. Let's go watch practice.
Yeah, let's go.